Oh, shit. Once again, I've been surprised by the start of the theme song. It doesn't make sense, but this is Yo, Is This Racist?
That it is, yes. This is a podcast where we listen to your voicemails about the various racisms in your life or your friends' lives. And we talk about them, sometimes with a special guest or guests. This week, we happen to have a special guest.
Yeah, Jason Concepcion is here. What's up? Hey, man. Oh, wait. We forgot to introduce ourselves, but hi, Jason. You start.
Hello. Hello. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion. I'm an executive producer and host at Crooked Media.
You did very well with that. Do you want to introduce us as well, since clearly we're idiots?
Oh, man. My name is Andrew T. That is Tawny
Newsome.
We're here. We do the racism beat. Obviously, you know, some weeks it feels less like blood money than others, but this is one of those weird weeks, I guess. And Jason, you know, thanks for coming. We're obviously had this scheduled before we knew what the week was going to be like.
Yes.
So I guess there's kind of like nothing else to do but sort of talk about the roller coaster of Asian stuff. And I don't normally do this, but I'm just going to assume this is something you're okay with. But you're Filipino.
That's correct.
And I actually was like really nice. I was really glad to have specifically, I feel like Chinese Americans have been sucking up a lot of the discourse this week, or like East Asians. I don't know. I feel like I'm really happy, you know, just to see you in general. Also, I can't believe how nice your camera is. Like the depth of field on this thing is.
You like that? Thank you very much. It's a really nice like Sony 4K camera that we got so that we could record video and stuff.
Makes sense.
From when we go live, and it just does that. It does the depth of field thing. I don't know how it does it. It does it on its own.
I assume it has more of a lens than the little piece of plastic on my iMac.
Yeah, I got some extra lens for it. Sony, Asian excellence in effect.
I think those lenses might still be Swiss, but I'm actually pretty sure they're Swiss. Doesn't matter. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess I have a couple things I kind of wanted to mention, but I just, is there anything, you know, how has this week struck you, I guess?
I mean, it's been very sad and it feels very present, you know, and I think in a way that feels of a piece with the last 4 years or something like that, you know, certainly that feeling has become more pointed over the last, you know, since 12 months since COVID has come into our lives, and the discourse around it has been, you know, objectively and manifestly racist. In particular, the blaming of Chinese people for the virus, and it feels like that's created certainly has created an atmosphere where it just, you know, feels dangerous. But it's, you know, felt varying degrees of dangerous for the last 4 years, and I think one of the themes of the last 4 years is like who feels the presence of that danger and who is pretty comfortable with whatever the temperature is, you know, those two camps of people. And the discourse around Asians, social justice, that's all the stuff that's been happening for a couple of years now.
I think the thing that I have been consistently getting in trouble with is I think this week more than ever, I think I got a little too nuanced on Twitter, perhaps. And I think that the highest volume of like this is an inside conversation at the very least, and on some level shut the fuck up. Because I kind of kept eliding Asians with really like kind of like wealthy East Asians. You know, because I in my opinion, I just had a week where I was like, I feel like there's a lot of wealthy East Asians who have been comfortable in the model minority shit and are feeling new to this, and they're having a lot of reactions. I mean, just like I think to me, the thing that was exemplified it is like Andrew Yang being like,
oh yeah, well,
shout out to the NYPD. Yeah, and well, it's like, yeah, come on. How are you going to fight white supremacy? But you know, and people are mad at me for not sort of supporting Andrew Yang. Please go ahead.
Yeah, why? You know, it's like, Andrew Yang is, it's like, there's a lot of people, to your point, who are just coming into some kind of dawning of awareness that the white people around them know that they are not white, or and are
right.
and could revoke that status at any given time. You know, Andrew Yang's. So Andrew Yang applauded the NYPD for stepping up patrols of Chinatown and other Asian neighborhoods in New York City. Several Chinatowns in New York City. So, you know, the ones in Queens and one in Brooklyn. The thing about Yang, let's just, first of all, the police response. The enemy here is white supremacy. The enemy here is the fact that, you know, the sheriff's deputy who gave the press conference after the mass shooting in Atlanta was then discovered to have been a fervent supporter of the kind of anti-China, China spread the flu discourse that has amplified the kind of dark energy in the consciousness that has exploded into violence now.
And profited from it. Like he made
and profited from it. Yeah, I mean, it was a t-shirt.
This China's to blame from China. Like, exactly. It can't get more direct than that.
Exactly. Yeah. So like, are we... how's that guy's job doing? Is he going to remain on the force? You know, there's any number of examples, police forces around the country of people who are traffic in alt-right websites, who have been seen making alt-right gestures, who have tattoos espousing alt-right white supremacist views.
Yeah.
So the answer to this cannot simply be more cops in more non-white neighborhoods, because while I'm sure that there are some residents of those neighborhoods who take comfort from that, that's actually not a solution. And then some people got at me on Twitter about like, well, you know, like there were a bunch of attacks in San Francisco and others that were, it was not like a white terrorist.
Person.
It was just some, it was like it was a African-American person or someone else of some other race. I'm like, well, that's the, well, having more police looking out for that is, again, not a solution to any of this. The solution is like, how do we get these people to lose their jobs?
Yeah.
Especially with specificity to this most recent horrible crime, these 8 women murdered in Atlanta.
Yeah.
The sex work community has never been clearer than, they've always been very clear about what they need, and that's decriminalization. And even if the women who were murdered were not sex workers, the fact that they worked in these types of establishment that are often taken to be that way, they're subject to the same type of abuse and discrimination, often from police and from law enforcement. Police don't protect these people. So to make any kind of a statement praising cops in this moment is at least wildly tone deaf, and at worst, downright sinister.
Yeah. It's like, to me, with, you know, any Yang praising the police for the response, it's like, what are you doing to scrub the NYPD of malicious actors? Like, it's actually tremendously simple what the solution is, you know?
Well,
but nobody seems to want to do it.
We can't even get rid of cops with like white supremacist tattoos.
I know, that's crazy.
Not just views, but people so extreme that they are willing to put it publicly on their body. Like, we're so wildly fucked as far as like policing goes. It's really, I mean, not just Yang. So yesterday I was like yesterday as of the time of this recording, I was kind of going off because there was a rally in the San Gabriel Valley, in the city of San Gabriel, where the mayor of San Gabriel was basically calling for a war on crime, like literally like white supremacist rhetoric, like war on crime. These people are animals, you know, this sort of shit. And it's like, I get in trouble because, and again, this is me eliding. This is basically a core group of rich East Asian people. And I'm about to call them Asian because I'm an idiot and I love the confusion and abuse. But it is like that group of Asian people who, like, at the drop of a hat, jump into, like, essentially anti-blackness and white supremacy.
Yeah.
Immediately. And then I don't know what to do, because I get, well, you know, people get mad when I point that out.
Part of the real problem with talking about this, and talking about it in the way that we have to talk about it because of this explosion of violence, is that these issues have been ignored for years. There's no kind of like center of gravity around these discussions because we're all from everywhere. You know, it's like we're from China, we're from Vietnam, we're from Bangladesh, we're from, you know, the Philippines. And there's, you know, Huasu had a really good piece about this in The New Yorker about how hard it is to get some kind of like central cultural voice around any of these issues to kind of parse what's happening. Yeah. And then the other thing is, you know, and because of that, these issues get ignored because, one, mainstream society doesn't really care. I think that there's like a baseline of abuse or hostility towards Asians that's kind of like just okay. You know what I mean? Like the 80s, it was all about the Japanese are coming to like destroy our economy and that. And it, and it just rolls on like that. You know, like I've been called names all throughout my life as every Asian I know. And I think I think for the most part, people are just like, oh, sorry. Like, that's just a thing we do as kids, you know, like, and so when an issue like this explodes into violence and the various other incidents of violence that have occurred over the past several months, I think that there's no like agreed upon way to talk about it, nor is there a central voice that we can turn to. You know, in the wake of the murder spree in Atlanta, it was like, where do we go? Where do we donate? Yeah. You saw a lot of people say, oh, who can I donate to?
Yeah.
Who even is like the person, you know, like, and so I think there's a lot of confusion. And then you have the fact that, you know, it's amongst Asians, we, you know, especially young Asians, second generation, third generation, we talk about this a lot. It's like, you know, like our parents are, a lot of them are pretty right wing and family members, easily fall into that kind of anti-black rhetoric for any number of reasons, which we can go into. So that part of it is complicated too.
Yeah.
I mean, normally we don't like push people's identities so forward, but I actually was curious like how you feel about, as we'll just say, I think it's from Ali Wong, but just like the sort of as a brown Asian, like, it's troubling to me how much oxygen, like, East Asians, fair-skinned Asians fucking take in this conversation. Like, I don't like it. And it feels like the movie Crazy Rich Asians was really about, like, 15 Chinese people.
Yes.
And yet it's still called Asians. It's sort of actively anti-brown Asian within the movie, within the text of the movie. And yet we still just are like, yeah, those are the, quote, Asians.
It does bother me. It's irritating. I think, you know, we're in this as an ethnicity, we're in that spot where any kind of representation is, you got to take it right at this point. You know, it's like, oh,
right.
Okay, that's Bling Empire. Great. We've got a reality show now. It's good. Right. You know, but it's a little irritating. And, you know, that's without even getting into the subtext of, like, a lot of these conversations about like fairer skinned Asians, darker skinned Asians, brown Asians, and the way those delineations are treated within cultures.
Yeah. Sorry, I think it would surprise
a lot of people.
Yeah. No. I was way too casual with that vocabulary for her. I feel like that's how like Asian people talk about it. But then even as I was saying it, like, is this just how fucking Chinese people talk about this shit? Am I being an asshole? I feel like I kind of was, but
I mean, I think it's honestly, I guess part of it is probably the hegemony of American media over the past 70 years or whatever. Probably, I'm, you know, maybe this is just a guess, but there is, I think, in you know, there's in Filipino culture too. Like, we love a light-skinned Filipino. It's
right,
great.
Right, right.
You know, if a family member, if I was dating a Caucasian person, it would be commented on by my family. They'd be like, oh, white.
Yeah.
They'd be very excited about it. Right, so there is, I think, in, you know, like in Filipino culture as well, this idea of like whiteness as this elite thing to aspire to.
Yeah. It's, I think that's maybe the thing I'm just, yeah, we're like really seeing in real time how like the once like extant Asian civil rights organization that like, you know, coalesced around really the civil rights movement, you know, it was like, you know, there were Asian people, yellow peril, black power kind of shit. Like, and we are all severely out of practice with that. Like there is no
for sure
Asian leader. And that's and that's why we see shit like just a straight up right wing rally in fucking San Gabriel Valley last night.
Yeah, I there's probably a lot of reasons for this. I think a lot of it is because like my family when we moved to New York, I was born there. My mom and dad had arrived in the country like maybe 3-4 years before I was born. But you know, they didn't teach me Tagalog or anything because they just wanted me to assimilate with like no accent. And I think that is a common kind of feeling of we can pass this and we just get into it. And I think that that's still, you know, I have a lot of cousins and stuff who are, you know, they went into the military. They're Trump people. And it's like, I've had a million arguments where I'm like, they know you're not white. Like at some point, all this stuff you're supporting, when it turns against you, it's going to be like the poem at the Holocaust Museum, because like, there's going to be no one left. Like they know that you're not white. Why are you supporting this?
Well, this kind of is the week when like I wonder, I mean, truly, I think I've said this before, but my dad, I actually don't know whether he voted for Trump the first time. My dad is one of those idiots who is an actual card carrying libertarian, so I think he genuinely may have voted Libertarian Party like every time, but I think he voted for Biden this time solely because of China virus, you know, eliciting some kind of self-interest within him. This is a me problem, but that also irritates me.
Well, I mean, like this conversation right now, I think is an example of how hard the issue is. We're sitting here like trying to compare notes. There's not, unlike in conversations, other kind of conversations around other kinds of like specific like anti-black racism. There's no. It feels like we've got to compare notes about where do you grow up? Like were there any Asian people around? Like I grew up in a white area, so it was like this. And I was always very aware that it was like, you have to be watchful of anything that can happen, and that you could be called a slur at any given time. When I tell people, like I've told people this in interviews, like, oh yeah, my friends in school would call me like Asian slurs, and they'd be like, well, why didn't you just get new friends? It's like, that's when you're a kid, you just kind of like deal with you're not like, it's not like trading cards where you can open a pack of like new whiteies. Like that's, you were dealt these friends and then you have to deal with it for years. And so that's the fact that we've all been dealing with this for years. And then now all of a sudden everyone is like, Harry, how are you doing? Like what's going on? How are you feeling about this? Is really like a weird whipsawing feeling to have been. The fact that I was texted by so many people, I feel great. It's wonderful that people have been checking on me. Like, how are you doing with all this? What's going on? When, in a sense, obviously this has been a terrible week. In a sense, it's not something that hasn't been happening for a long time, for weeks before this, but it's just kind of like you just deal with the baseline level of noise it is.
Yeah, the texts, right? That's something that had me, you know, speaking from this summer, when it was text a black friend month, again, also like beautiful intentions mostly, but what I don't want is a text when there's national news of anti-black racism. What I want is to know that you're someone who will stand with me through my whole life when this happens forever, you know, and it's, I don't know, I feel so ill-equipped to talk about this because this feels so much harder for me because the experiences are different. And I understand that. And I think because they are different, it's made me feel like I'm realizing that I have gotten terrifyingly comfortable with the way Black people are treated and murdered in this country. I understand it. Mm-hmm. And it's terrifying, but I get it. And so seeing this happen to a group that I feel similar to, but in so many ways, these women who are murdered are nothing like me for class reasons, for citizenship reasons. It has shooken me because this is different. And it's just so upsetting because I think there are so many Black people, especially, who want to say, hey, we've been through this. Okay, come over here. And like, there's an instinct to help in a way that is not actually helpful because it is not addressing how uniquely different the racism is. It all stems from hate. It all stems from white supremacy. But the way that we are regarded in this country is just completely different. And I also feel insane about the way that the media has tried to separate these victims' womanness from their Asianness, which is in no way possible.
Yeah.
In theory, on paper, or in the way you walk around in the world, it's just not possible. So to try to mince words and, you know, decide whether this is a hate crime, whether this is, you know, just driven by sexual fetishes. Kind of hate crime? Right. Oh, no.
Yeah.
The murderer said that he was only mad because it was a sexual temptation issue. It was not race-based.
Right.
As if these women could ever separate that for themselves.
Right. Exactly.
The victims can't. I can't. No one can. So it's insane to even talk about it like that. It's also insane because it seems that then it's more permissible to kill women than it is to kill people of color, I guess, or to kill sex workers than it, you know, like because of their perceived profession.
The comment about he had a bad day, that the sheriff's deputy who was later found to have bought and sold t-shirts promoting the China virus conspiracy said. So when he said that, it's you know, there were similar comments made by an announcer that had referred to a Oklahoma girls basketball team who had kneeled as N-words on a hot mic, not realizing it was hot. He later would say that it was because he had low blood sugar. It's like these kind of like excuses. They're like really darkly comic on the one hand, because it's like they the idea is that these white men, they're walking around all day. It's taking all their energy and concentration to just hold in that the racism that could explode out of them at any moment. And it's like if they spill coffee on their leg or something, you know, or they don't eat a fucking orange, that this could just come out. And so in that sense, it's hilarious, but it's also like really scary because that is, they're framing it like that. It's being framed like that. And it is, you know, if not for various voices on social media and elsewhere, that would just be accepted. That was an acceptable thing. That's, you can just say that. Oh, he had a bad day.
It's like saying everyone feels like this. We just know to keep it inside.
It really we're thinking this about
like,
you.
If everyone had got really stressed out, we could murder a bunch of you people who don't look like us, right?
Exactly.
Because you're not like us, and you're
you
not
get
really
it,
human,
right? Yeah, you get it.
But we know better because we're good. We're good. Right. We're good citizens. I'm a pastor. I'm a father.
Yeah.
I know better than to murder a massage parlor worker.
Right. And in that sense, it's actually terrifying. You know. To have it framed that way, that like all these, they're just walking around all day, just concentrating on not killing you.
Yeah.
But and it could happen.
Anything could push them over the edge. Structure of this episode is going to be a little weird. Let's take a quick break and then keep this conversation going. Well, you know, for the listeners, you probably just listened to an ad with a fairly incongruous energy to this conversation. But for us, mere seconds have passed. We're still talking about just the simmering, evidently constant rage of white men in particular.
Right.
Speaking of rage, I just want to point listeners to our friends and former guests, friends of the show, Kulap Vlaysak and Suchin Pak, with their podcast, Add to Cart. They did a great episode this week, which was both informative and gathered and, you know, beautifully done. They honored the victims, but they also just let out some of their rage. And it was so good to hear because I know Ku can be a rageaholic and I love her for it, but I think Suchin even says that she doesn't really emote like that often. And so it felt very good for me to hear because I was happy that they were able to share their experiences. And I think everyone needs to listen to it. You will cry. So sorry in advance, but it's really good.
Yeah. I wonder actually, so as we're sort of circling around, like, it's so evident for us that this is like a white supremacy problem, even right. when the direct perpetrators are maybe not white. It's like that has been the thing that's been so funny, is watching the racists on Twitter think they have gotchas with this shit. It's like, well, some of right. the perpetrators are, you know, whatever, not white in right. this way, or like he claims this. And it was really like distressing. I mean, to me, I think that maybe also like goes back to this like police thing, or like the anti-blackness in Asian communities, where I'm like, I feel like we're at the cusp of an opportunity for Asians writ large to realize that anti-blackness, even if it weren't simply wrong on its face, right. is also a weakness for us. It is a thing right. that does makes it actually, us vulnerable.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't work for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It hurts us. That yeah. is the shit that actually hurts us. And yet, like, we're so much further from it. I don't know. It's like, and then I start to feel like, well, the people that espouse that, you know, like, are hopeless or whatever. And I don't, yeah.
Regarding the various perpetrators who are not white terrorists, when you send signals out into the world, these were statements from the mouth of the president, people close yeah. to him, yeah. about who is to blame for something, people pick that up. You know, yeah. that's everywhere. Mm-hmm. That's on television. That's like on social media. That's everything you read. When you hear that these people are to blame for this, that mm-hmm. message goes out and people hear it. You know?
Yeah.
I don't. So to me, like, whoever the attackers were, the people who were not this most recent, you know, mass murderer in Georgia, they heard that message. And, you know, yeah. there are people who, for reasons, would like to attack people who are weaker than them. And when you get a clear message broadcast yeah. on television or on the radio or mm-hmm. over social media about who is okay to attack, well, you've just got yeah. You just got your next target. And I think that is that's a big thing about what's going on here. It's the same thing that happened in the wake of 9/11, you know, same thing that yeah. happened, that's been happening to black people in this country for the entire time.
Ever.
You know, it's yeah. like those messages are out there. The way you talk about people, especially when it comes from people in power, lets other people yeah. know who is okay to blame for things.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you said, who is okay to attack, who deserves the attack, and also who will not fight back. Like all yeah. of those messages have been perpetrated by TV and media. And, you know, I think it's really important to speak to the people in our little lanes. And for Andrew and me, that's Hollywood. And
yeah.
I mean, we've both been loudmouths to the point of probably getting fired from numerous jobs for things like this already. But like there is a real, some things I tend to hold my tongue a little bit on. I don't hold my tongue about race, but I tend to hold my tongue about the perpetration of like the hatred of women, because it comes through in subtle jokes. It comes through yes. in throwaway jokes about sex workers or about, you know, sluts or whatever. And that deep hatred of women, for me, that's all tangled with that,
yeah.
with the racism, with yeah. with everything that this crime exemplifies, this hate crime, that's all together. And
yeah.
the way that television and Hollywood perpetrates the things that you can and ostensibly should do to women when you're mad,
yeah,
man, yes. It's over.
It all profits it is done. The same people. I also just wanted yeah. to say a little thing going back to the, like, the, I mean, and especially like the black and Asian animosity. That's also like, you know, that's like LA riots shit. And it's because yeah. like both sets of people were forced out of, you know, businesses in white mm-hmm. communities, and they've been purposefully pitted against each other on every conceivable level.
Yeah.
And that is where that violence fucking comes from. And it's like, I don't know. It's so funny that like Twitter racists think they have a gotcha, but it's like, crack a fucking history book, idiots. Like,
well, that's not sure. That yeah. won't happen. You know, there was a video lately that was going around a couple days ago. So there was another attack against an older Asian woman. And she, you know, fought back against her attacker and fucked him up pretty bad. And in the video, she is, you know, wailing, and she's talking about that the guy hurt her. And the guy is like on a stretcher and the EMTs are taking him away. And this is like not white EMTs. And it had to be pointed out to people who were like, oh yeah, this guy got what he deserved, that like what you're looking at here is the victim of a hate crime alone. No one is helping her. She's screaming in a language that no one's trying mm-hmm. to engage with mm-hmm. or can understand. And she's incredibly alone in this moment. And the perpetrator of the attack is like being carried yeah. away to medical help.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
And we're like celebrating. Yeah. And she had been attacked and no one is looking at her. It's those kind of like the machinery of bias and the machinery of like white supremacy is like so entrenched that you don't even really know that you're taking part in it sometimes. And I'm sure that these emergency workers did not realize that, wait, why are we tending to the white guy who attacked mm-hmm. the woman when the woman is there clearly face lacerated alone? Mm-hmm. You know, these questions can be really hard to parse, I think, for people to just like realize like what's going on.
But I think you're right, is that it can be hard to parse and we don't always know when we're participating in these biases, even by sharing the video because people are celebrating the fact that she was victorious and people are happy for her. They don't realize that what the message that they're saying, which is, yeah, this is how it should be, which is like, no, this shit shouldn't have happened in the first place.
Right.
So I kind of like to think about it like, you know, it's all exercise, right? We're all trying to go to the gym of anti-racism. Boof, I'm so sorry for this. and, you know, shows like this, where we admittedly are not experts in this, we are mm-hmm. good at sharing our perspective and talking about things close to us, like Hollywood and representation. But when it comes to like really intense, you know, life and death things like this, there are, you know, much more seasoned academics and smarter experts to listen to. But shows like this is like taking a walk, right?
Yeah.
You need to do that. It's part of taking care of yourself. It's part of your anti-racism work. I hate even saying that about this show because it truly is meant to be, you know, cathartic and entertaining. And so weeks like this get tough. But if it's all part of work that you're doing, and that means reading and, you know, reading the news critically and looking to other sources, then you create a more well-rounded practice of just bettering yourself. And that's all that we can do. So I feel like everyone this week is like, what do? We didn't know this was a problem. How do we help? And it's like, okay, it's not going to happen right now. You got to get
well,
it just...
I will add to that, though. It's that, like, this is new for a lot of people, but it is not new mm-hmm. for every person. And there are a lot of people who have been doing this shit for a while. I was about to say I'm lucky, but I'm not lucky. I'm the opposite of lucky. But my sister actually lives in Atlanta, so I was able to text her and ask her, are there specific Atlanta-based Asian groups that are helpful? I will
you
pull
had
that
yeah. Advancing Justice Atlanta, you had Asian American Advocacy Fund.
Yeah, I mean, and she's been a big advocate of the Free 99 community fridge, just because that is a mutual aid organization that is sort of, to her eyes, as far as she knows, the closest as it comes to like a, not mm-hmm. not more intersectional, but a more cross, you know, not one single type of identity.
Cross community,
yeah, sort of mutual aid, and in Atlanta, because it is so overwhelmingly Black, like that those bridges between those communities are like extra important, because it's like that's the kind of shit. I don't know. And actually, sorry, so to get on the other Twitter high horse I was on, and this is again me gonna probably actually make some enemies that may actually affect my life, but I was a little like disheartened by the number of Hollywood people I knew advocating for solutions to this, Asian Hollywood people I knew, who were advocating basically representation-based solutions alone that would just so happen to immensely profit them. And I was like, this is like, I don't even feel so super comfortable like doing this, you know, having a podcast that has ads on it. And you know, and it's not like we're making, you know, green light my Asian TV show money off of this. But like two things. One is like, yes, I know if you're in Hollywood if you have a hammer, everything looks like a nail. That's the industry, right. You know, that's what you can improve. But the part of me was like, I feel sometimes this is nakedly self-serving, and that makes me feel gross too. Including myself. How about that? If I throw myself in with that crowd.
Yeah, I guess it's wild because over the summer when every Black person was like, stop asking me how to fix this. Here's my Cash App. Here's my Venmo. I kind of wasn't mad at it. Like, it's not how I would choose to walk through the world, but I don't know. I didn't have the same feeling then. I see what you're saying, though, about folks in Hollywood who maybe could just do the thing they're trying to do and kind of move in silence and achieve the representation they're going for and affect the change that way without, I don't know, maybe without, maybe it's just the tone in which they're asking for it.
I don't know. I really don't know. I'm sure it's a me problem, too.
Yeah, I think tone, you know, often tone is so hard to parse on Twitter and social media in general. For me, it's like, listen, if so much of the way we move through the world is about self-interest, and it's like if we can somehow align self-interest with doing the right thing, then I'm for it. Like, I'll get on any train that will take me closer to the goal.
Yeah.
You know what I
mean?
Like, what?
Yeah.
Sure.
You know what? Sorry, going back to the people checking in thing, I did take a, I think this was a suggestion from Tawny, but like, you know, because I got a couple texts from people that I'm like, it's a bad look if I'm one of your top five Asian friends. even top 10, because that means you don't have enough, because we're not that close. But I started, you know, because those texts always end with sort of, in my opinion, empty feeling if there's anything you need. And I started snap sending a donation link off of that. Mm-hmm. Anything you need? Like, yes, actually. Send money to these people right now. And I think that, it, to the extent that I'm willing to entertain the, like, emotional labor check-in.
I just think it's, look, I can only speak for myself, but I didn't get one text in June that made me feel like, oh, I'm glad to know they're on my side. Like, I either knew you were with us or we're just coworkers, you know?
Yeah.
And that's fine. That doesn't mean I hate you. We can just be coworkers, but I'm not coming to you when there's a serious thing. So I don't really, I don't see the value in the text. I want to see the future actions. I want to just like see your actions from afar. And that tells me that you're in the fight with us.
100% the same. You know, like I got a lot of, I got warm texts from people. It was nice. But I don't know what you're doing other than texting me, a person who is privileged enough to not have to leave my house and therefore subject myself to the threat of random anti-Asian violence, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm fine. I'm anxious, but I'm fine. Like, I think there are a lot of people that are not fine and that work within a 10-mile radius of your house or just, you know, like, what are you doing other than this? I think that is a great way to put it. That's exactly my feeling as well. What are you doing other than texting me?
Yeah.
And posting Stop Asian Hate on your Insta, which, let me not dog that, because that is truly the least you can do if fucking candy companies and Nabisco and shit can summon the power to tweet Black Lives Matter or whatever. The very least you can do, especially if you're a famous person, is post something denouncing this shit, because then when you have, you know, racist fucking fans who like your comedy work or whatever, they know not to fuck with you. They know not to come be in your shit.
Yeah.
That's the very least you can do, and that's all.
I'm 99% sure I'm stealing this from Kara Brown, but the Black Squares thing really, like, both was incredibly goofy and performative, and yet any white person I know who did not post a Black Square, or any white person period who did not post a Black Square, also completely unacceptable. Like, they can't win.
Well,
but like,
I know what you're saying. I do want to point out the Black Square thing was a suppression tactic. So there were some white people that were hip to that and did not post for that reason.
No, I know. But
I know what you're saying. Like, if they didn't post anything, I'm like, you couldn't even put a grid. You couldn't even do something on the grid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, at the very least.
This is like zooming out, but one of the real, just kind of like heartbreaking emotions I had after the election in 2016 was this dawning realization that, like, there were just like a lot of white people that didn't fuck with me personally and a lot of the people that I care about in a real, real real aggressive, dangerous way. And they were willing to put it out there. And I think that's the same feeling that's carried through and that's carrying through now. Is like it is shocking how many people want to hurt you. Like anytime I open up my phone, it is like really amazing. It's amazing how many people out there are fine. And then that's the other thing is how many people also maybe don't want to see anything bad happen to you. That's not the thing. But it also doesn't profit them at all to speak out about it. So, you know.
And they can't step out of whatever their own shit is.
Yes.
To speak
and that's the other thing that is like tremendously hurtful as well, is this understanding that there's a lot of people out there that like you personally, they're just, you know, or like black people in their lives personally, but they're going to keep their head down because the money's good or whatever.
There's also the flip side of that, actually thinking, I mean, this is sort of more maybe another former guest of this show, Shea Serrano thing, but also I feel like I've seen it on your feed a little bit because you're very involved in basketball and sports is this thing where like people can be fans of people of color, basketball, typically black people, and yet virulently racist.
It is like a
very, very like, I mean, it's not a difficult thing to parse, but it is like a thing where I'm like, so often I feel like I see, again, maybe more on Shea, but sometimes I see it on yours too. It's like, I love your work. I just wish you would shut up about all the racism.
Yeah, I don't know about you. Me personally, I would love to just be like, let's watch the game and let's watch a movie. Like, I would love that. I would love to not have to talk about this. It'd be great.
Just
I think
to
be it would
an
be
unscathed
really
white. Yeah. I'd love to be an unscathed
love it.
White moving through the world. I would love it. Be on TV.
Oh my God, it would be so good to just be like to live with that level of lack of stress where I don't have to worry about this. But unfortunately, like, I feel like I do. And believe me, when people come at me like that, I'm like, listen, I don't want to be doing this. not the thing I'd prefer to be doing right now.
I mean, that's sort of the dirty secret of this show, which is like, you know, if we can sort of shunt all that type of emotional labor bullshit to an hour a week, we can tell people that's not, you know, I do it a lot on a volunteer basis on Twitter, but I don't have to.
Well, this episode's a little long, but I think it's valuable and good. And Jason has been kind enough to let us just talk about news, whereas normally we would get more in depth with our guest. Jason, what do you have going on right now?
My podcast, Take Line, that I co-host with two-time WNBA champion, current co-owner of the Atlanta Dream, Renee Montgomery, launched the week of the 15th of March 15th, and it comes out every Tuesday. You can find it wherever you get your podcast. Please follow us. Please like and subscribe. Please give us the 5-star ratings or I will burn your house. My NBA-centric video show called All Caps NBA also debuted on Friday, and it comes out every Friday thereafter. Please also subscribe on the YouTube channel. And that's it.
Yeah.
That's very cool. I like any listeners who are sports heads. I mean, it's cool to go listen to Jason's shit because you know he's in the fight with us, man. You don't got to listen to some racist talking about sports.
I mean, that's the thing. That was the pitch for the show is that, listen, we're going to do all the things that a sports show does. We're going to talk about games. We're going to talk about players. We're going to talk about trades and such. But we're going to lean into the conversations that that are at the forefront of sports, but that other places are going to kind of like try and shy away from or try and find an excuse to not talk about. We're going to talk about it.
Yeah,
because it doesn't have to be an escape, right? Like sports is just a thing you like, but it still means that people are involved and they're human beings and we have to talk about the things that affect them.
Jason's and it's one of the smartest motherfuckers I kind of know.
Well, thank you.
And no, but it's like this every time he talks. So like, you know, thoughtful and wonderful. So sorry, I interrupted you.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that, you know, sports and particularly the WNBA and the NBA are basically the only spaces in American life where black men and women with real leverage interact with the white guys who have all the power in the country, you know, and they have to be listened to. And so in that sense, it's a it's a fascinating space to pay attention to. And sports in general is just always has been at the forefront of these kind of questions.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Shit. Well, truly, thanks for being here, listeners. You know, hopefully, we'll get back to some semblance of normality next week. But you know what? Maybe fucking not. Actually, no. I know who our guests are next week, and the answer is absolutely not. It's going to be another real ass episode. But mostly, you know, Jason. Yeah, thanks for taking the time, man.
Anytime. Thanks for having me on. It was delightful.
Yeah, we'll have you back on a funner week when the racism is fun racism, you know?
Yeah, the lighthearted racism. Oof, goodness. Okay, well, I think that's our show. Thank you to everyone who's listening. And again, that recent episode of Add to Cart.
Yes.
Subscribe wherever you subscribe by Kulap and Suchin is really, really great and does better than whatever the hell I was trying to express here. They nail it. So go listen to that. We are Tawny Newsom and Andrew T. You can find us at Trondi Newman and Andrew T. on all the things, at Yo Is This Racist, etc.
Call in 323-389-7223. We'll find a use for the voicemail somewhere. All right, peace. This is suboptimal.